standing on the rubble of her home. She cries out for her parents. But the voices are those she cannot understand. She's gone.
Assalamu alaikum and welcome to Remember Palestine with me, Lauren Booth. Dramatic events this week across all aspects of political life in occupied Palestine. Israel has been caught on the hop by the surprise and speedy signing of a peace agreement between Fatah and Hamas. Today, news comes that Ismail Haniyeh, the charismatic Hamas prime minister, has chosen not to be part of a new coalition government. In today's show, we'll be talking to a political source in Gaza about those developments. We'll also be asking whether the Egyptian government will stand true to its pledges on opening the border with Gaza. All that, plus a world-famous Palestinian author sharing her insights into the situation. But first, let's hear what the word on the street is in the Gaza Strip.
Palestinians in Gaza are celebrating after the reconciliation between rival Palestinian factions, Fatah and Hamas. After a four-year rift, the two key Palestinian factions have agreed in Cairo to set up a unified caretaker government, which will pave the way for new elections.
I would like to congratulate the Palestinian people, especially in Gaza and the West Bank, for the Palestinian reconciliation between Fatah and Hamas, which took place under Egyptian auspices.
Palestinians living in Gaza are hopeful that the end of the siege may be in sight now that changes in foreign policy in Egypt are finally resulting from the Tahrir Square uprising. Egyptian Foreign Minister Nabil Al Arabi said that Egypt would help to ease the blockade by permanently reopening the Rafah crossing.
The Egyptian Foreign Minister is a patriotic man and is keen on the interests of Palestinians as the Palestinians themselves.
I believe that the Egyptian Foreign Minister is honest about his statements, and I also believe that Egypt has started to change its policies towards the Gaza Strip.
But despite Al Arabi's statement, the situation at Rafah has not changed and people are still struggling to make their way in and out of Gaza.
Regarding the reopening of the crossing for Palestinians, I really think that the fact that there is a peace accord between Israel and Egypt would prevent the permanent reopening of the crossing, but I still hope that it will reopen.
For Gazans, this support from their Egyptian neighbors is seen as a major step towards stopping Israel's hegemony in the region, and many feel that it will weaken the Israeli hold over the tiny coastal enclave.
The opening of the crossing for the Palestinian people in Gaza will definitely weaken the Israeli control over Gaza and weaken its policies of siege.
Many here believe that uprisings in the Middle East have had positive effects on Palestinians.
Gazans hope that changes in neighboring Egypt will help put an end to years of suffering under the blockade. Ashraf Shannon, reporting for Remember Palestine Gaza.
Well, joining me now to discuss the peace agreement taking form between Palestinian factions is Dr. Rada Kami, acclaimed author of In Search of Fatima and lifelong activist for Palestinian justice. Rada, thanks very much for coming to Remember Palestine. This historic week, does it feel historic from where you're coming from?
Well, not really. I mean, it feels good. We're very happy that these two Palestinian parties, which have been feuding for a few years now, quite unwisely, really, and could only play to Israel's advantage, they finally realize that that is not the way forward and they should unite and get together. That is very good and it's very sensible and so on. However, we really must not get carried away. After all, We're talking about a local situation amongst a third of the worldwide Palestinian people. So we have to put these things into perspective. You know, there must be about 10 or 11 million Palestinians worldwide. Mm. The people of the West Bank, East Jerusalem and Gaza number about 3.5 million. Mm. So that gives you an idea of the fact that this is not, first of all, the majority of the Palestinians. Secondly, it in itself does not indicate that the problem of Palestine will actually be resolved, but it is a very encouraging and positive step.
Now, do you see Israel as being ready to negotiate with a coalition government? I mean, the early signs, the sounds coming from Netanyahu's government have been very negative. We will not deal with Hamas until they recognise Israel and renounce violence. In fact, we won't deal with Hamas at all, I think Netanyahu said. So where does that leave even a coalition government?
Well, it's very clear that Israel has not been ready to negotiate in good faith with the Palestinian side. I think it's not too mistaken to say ever. They've never negotiated in good faith. They've been through the form of negotiations. They've got out of the negotiations what they want. They've and mainly, you see, what they've wanted is to keep the process going while not really conceding anything. And, of course, using the time they've gained to take more Palestinian territory. That's the Israeli ploy.
You know, it was former Palestinian delegate to the United Kingdom, Afif Safir, who said there's a lot of process and no peace.
Exactly. And I don't see that changing. Netanyahu is true to form. He has not... He's actually condemned this agreement. He said that Fatah and Abbas must decide whether it wishes to negotiate with Israel or with Hamas. That means, in other words, if Hamas is on board, then there can be no negotiations with Israel.
Now, let me just ask you quickly your opinion on Egypt's move and the effect that that must have had on the process within Palestine. That support now from a government rather than being swept aside and the Mubarak Israeli coalition going on. The people's uprising in Egypt, a big effect.
Oh, hugely important. Probably that is the most important thing in all this. Palestinians feel very encouraged, very, very cheered by Egyptian support, because, of course, we know that Egypt's people had never accepted Mubarak's policies of keeping a Palestinian population penned up, starving and so on. Ordinary Egyptians had never accepted it. And now, finally, they appear to have a government which also doesn't accept it and which is reflecting popular will. I think that's wonderful, and so does every Palestinian.
Well, we'll come back in just a moment, Rada. But right now, let's go to Gaza, where I'm joined down the line by a lecturer from Al-Aqsa University there for an update on political developments. Dr. Mahmoud Al-Hithani, welcome to Remember Palestine.
Welcome, thank you.
Can I ask you, straight away, Fatah and Hamas look to be forming a coalition. Ismail Haniyeh, the Prime Minister of Hamas in Gaza, now saying he won't be part of that coalition. What does that mean exactly, and why?
Can you repeat the question again, please?
Why won't Ismail Haniyeh be a part of the next government?
First of all, Ismail Haniyeh is still the Prime Minister for Palestinians in Gaza. And yesterday in his speech, he declared that he is going to step back to stay out since there is a problem that is coming to see the day of light during the reconciliation agreement signed 2 days ago in Cairo.
And the problem now, even for the coalition, is that the European Union and America still don't recognise Hamas as a political rather than an armed force. What does this mean to you in Gaza?
The problem of the Americans is that they will never come in line with international law and human rights that guarantee everything for Palestinians in light of their right of return, their right of self-determination, their right of compensation for the last 60 years of humiliation, killing, massacres, etc., etc., simply because Israel is one main part of the imperial project, the American imperial project, and the Middle East. Hence, America's rejection for any armed resistance that is guaranteed by international law. By international law, people can resist with all means possible any occupation, and Israel is an occupation on Palestinians. So it is contradicting when America says it will not recognize any resisting movement. This means that it in fact rejects the international law and rejects the UN resolutions that were passed against Israel for the last 60 years.
Okay, we can accept that point. But how is the coalition going to work under with that problem? How is the coalition going to manage?
Well, there are a lot of obstacles in the way for the coalition government that is tempted, because America is trying to put the rods on the machine of the coalition government. But in light of the recent changes in the Arab world, the revolutions, when the people started to speak their mind and to change the regimes, I think there is little room for America to maneuver against the people's will in the Arab world and in the Middle East. And now, again, we have in Egypt a promising government that hopefully is going to work hard in order to lift the siege on Gaza. So I don't think that America will find it easy to put obstacles for the coalition government this time.
And just finally, how bitterly does the rift between Fatah and Hamas run amongst the population of Gaza? Can it really just vanish now?
Sorry, the lines are a bit bad. Can you repeat that, please?
The bitterness between Fatah and Hamas amongst the people of Gaza, that is it gone?
Do you ask about... I hear a word, prisoners. Are you talking about the prisoners between Hamas and Fatah?
I think the lines are not good enough for this in-depth discussion, but thank you very much for joining us. We'll hopefully come back to you in future weeks. Well, let's rejoin Dr. Rada Karmi now for her analysis on what these developments could mean in the long term for the new Middle East. Rada, you wrote a book, I think a year and a half ago it was released, and it was on the idea of a one-state rather than a two-state solutions. Now, 130 states worldwide are pushing for Palestine to become a state on the notion of the two-state solution the end of this year. What does unity mean? Are you still in favour of one-state solution encompassing Israel and Palestine together?
Indeed I am, and I think any sensible person looking at this conflict has to support the idea of a secular state for both peoples, a unitary state. You see, people are slightly tending to talk about the possible UN recognition of a Palestinian state at the General Assembly in September as almost equivalent to the creation of a Palestinian state.
You're right.
Well, of course, that is not so. It is very far from the fact, because one has to reckon, first of all, with Israel and its settlements. There are 500,000 settlers in the occupied territories in the West Bank. Mm-hmm. Now, there is no indication whatever that the Israelis are willing to remove these settlers.
Indeed, they can't, because if they did, there'd be a civil war.
Absolutely.
You can't just say 500,000 people who don't want to, you know.
Absolutely. And therefore, you know, one really does have to look at reality. So the idea that actually there is shortly to be a Palestinian state, and therefore what are we going to do about talking about unitary state, that is not the situation. However, I do feel that there are two ways in which one can look at this. That on the one hand, the Palestinian idea, the Palestinian Authority, Abbas's idea, that we take the proposition of a Palestinian state on those 67 territories as if there were no settlements, mm-hmm. and we ask the world to recognize the right of Palestinians to set up their own state. What that can do is create a momentum which puts pressure on the Israelis, which is difficult for them to resist, as they have done in the past. This is no longer a one-to-one negotiation. This is now Israel against the international community. Mm. So it's quite a clever move to create a new situation. And, of course, it has a lot of diplomatic implications. Mm-hmm. If Palestine is a state, then it has the right to call on the UN for protection of its people. It has the right to actually negotiate with the other party as a state, not just as a group. So these things are possible benefits. At the same time, we have to remember that it could be, if the right people were leading this movement, that the two-state idea is actually only a step, a stage towards eventual unification between Israel and the Palestinians.
And we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you very much for that detailed analysis, Dr. Rada Karmi. Despite positive progress, people attempting to enter Gaza still face trouble at the Egyptian border. This report comes from RP's Jasmine Jiwa, showing how people have struggled to get in over the past week.
Guards on the Egyptian border caused misery for dozens of people forced to wait hours before being turned away from the Rafah gate. Those at the border wanted to offer humanitarian aid to Gazans or visit family in the besieged strip, but the number of people getting through the gate were few and far between.
Well, basically, I was born in Gaza, and Gaza is my hometown, and I came to visit my family. I haven't been here for like 10 years. The Egyptian embassies around the world tell people to come here to the border, and everything is open, especially after the revolution. And people assume they take planes and suspend their life to come here, and they just make them wait. And they wait for a couple of days, two or three days, and then give up and leave.
Egypt's compliance with Israel also kept out thousands of dollars worth of life-saving medication headed for the Rafah Hospital in Gaza.
What we took with us were the high-end antibiotics that are proven to be life-saving, that transform a child's illness from being very near death to within 3 days they can revive and sometimes be sent home with their parents.
The demand that gate be open to Gaza is to me crucial. There has to be a new life, a lifeline for these people who have been blockaded since the democratic victory of Hamas.
Officials claim that security reasons must keep these humanitarians out of Palestine. It is desperately hoped that with the recent changes in the region, these scenes have seen their last days in Rafah.
Well, I'm joined down the line now by James Jennings of US Academics for Peace, who, as we saw there, was unable to reach Gaza with a life-saving medicine. James, welcome to Remember Palestine. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Can you tell us what has happened, first and foremost, to the $25,000, I think, of medicines that you tried to take to Gaza?
Well, we've been working in Gaza intermittently for many years, but for the past 2 years, because of the draconian sanctions that have been imposed by the collusion of Israel, the United States, and Egypt, that has been nearly impossible to get medical supplies or other humanitarian aid in, except as you allow them to be checked by the Israeli forces. And we refuse to do that. We want to go through an internationally recognized border because we think that it's important that the border be opened. And that's what happened. Last week we went there. We were refused admission by the Egyptian authorities.
I was thinking as well of an office in Cairo in the government where international groups can call and get easy access to Rafah, because that's always been the problem, is this sort of strange, deliberately obtuse method of almost sneaking, trying to sneak across a border.
It's really because the Egyptian government has agreed with the Israeli government to stop easy access, and There was no easy access. It was actually when we applied to the foreign ministry, both with the ambassador of Egypt in Washington, the American ambassador in Cairo, the foreign ministry in Cairo, and in various departments of the foreign ministry, we have requested this. And when it goes to the Mukhabarat or the security police, then that's where it stops. So there are two levels of activity in Egypt in regard to Palestine. Mm-hmm. I'm very glad to see that the foreign minister has announced that it will be open within a few days.
James, on May the 15th, there's a proposal for a third intifada, another peaceful uprising, to go to the borders of Palestine and show solidarity with the people there by activists around the world. Have you heard anything about that?
I did hear that it was coming up, and we welcome anything that will advance the process of opening this border. I consider that the closure of Gaza for the most of the past 62 years, part of it was the Israeli occupation before they withdrew, but I consider all of that a crime against humanity because it has affected the people there, the children, the lives of people in terms of their livelihood, their education, their health, and it constitutes a crime against humanity. And the Egyptian government under Mubarak was in collusion with the Americans and the Israelis about this, and now it's going to be changed. We don't know how much it will change and how much effort it will take, but all the attention that can be brought to it throughout the world is welcome. It needs to be one of the foremost issues on the world political agenda.
James, just quickly, we're nearly out of time. Is there pressure in America on Obama to change his stance on not dealing with Hamas, for example?
Yes, so there'll be a lot of pressure, and the question is whether it will succeed or not. We don't know the answer to that, but certainly in the next 3 to 4 months before the fall, there are going to be dramatic changes. Netanyahu has got to make some choices. The Abbas government in the West Bank has to make some choices. The Mashal and Hamas government in Gaza has to decide, are they going to solve this issue peacefully, or is there going to be another?
Thanks very much for joining us. Sorry, we ran out of time there. Well, now it's time for our weekly roundup of global activism in solidarity with the Palestinian cause.
Western Australia's Friends of Palestine continue their ongoing protest against the Israeli company, Secret, which sells products made from the salts and minerals of the occupied Dead Sea.
This is a company that profits from the misery of the Palestinian people and the human rights abuses perpetrated by Israel.
The group called for the action in Perth in support of the international boycott, divestment and sanctions campaign. Activists from the international solidarity movement commemorated the life and work of Vittorio Arrigoni at his funeral in Italy. They spoke to hundreds of mourners at the ceremony in his hometown of Bolsiago near Milan about his time in Gaza.
For the international solidarity movement, Vittorio was really the missing heart, and it was this huge heart that kept us going in so many difficult times.
Hundreds of people are preparing to fly into Tel Aviv airport to visit the occupied Palestinian territories. The trip on July the 8th aims to urge the international community to recognize the rights of Palestinians to receive visitors from abroad. It will also support the rights of Palestinian citizens to travel without facing harassment.
Well, that's it for this week's Remember Palestine. Join us again for more breaking news from the front line of the new Middle East. See you next week. Goodbye.
Her war, she's too young.